Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right. And this is Tom Novolis, your host. And I am, once again, delighted to be here with you at a couple different programs, primarily at Liberty Works Radio Network. And I'm enjoying my time there. And for all of you to clearly know, which some of you do, others do not, is that you can find the archives of all the programming at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. For those that watch it on YouTube, you can see that up over my left shoulder, and it's always up there with good old Sam standing over my right shoulder. So just to give you a little visuals of what goes on. You can hear the broadcast on most likely your favorite podcast channel. So check that out and see where you want to listen to it and download it from. But you can always go to the archives there at SamuelAdamsReturns.net and pull down the podcast of this program as it suits your fancy. I have to say that one of the things that I am continuing to learn is how to take and really keep folks engaged in listening to the program. So today's program is really specific to voting in relationship to those who necessarily don't vote, and in particular, those that are of the evangelical slash Christian mindset, or what we're hearing and we're seeing many that are following the rhinos, if you will, following what I call the deep state Republicans, and are being persuaded to not vote for Donald Trump as it's moving towards November. So that's what I'm addressing today, is that if you truly are a believer in Jesus Christ, you can't vote for any Democrat, period. Okay? And if you don't want to vote for Donald Trump, then write in Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or someone like that. You know, do a write-in if your conscience so bears that peace. But following the Bushes, the whomever, whatever, all of the other neocons slash, as I always call them, Republicans that are deep staters that really do not have your best interest in mind, I would suggest that you then take and do a write-in candidate. Do not vote for a Democrat, because if you do, we're going to talk about it, in that you are following deception, and you are, in my opinion, and it's just not my opinion, but I'm finding that as I search history, scriptures, and truth, then you are leading your fellow man into sin if that particular person would be elevated to a place of authority. So we're going to kind of talk about that, but I got some interesting news, good news, interesting news. I'm excited. I have to, you know, take back some of the comments that I've made in the past, and surprises the living daylights out of me, quite frankly. I mean, God answers prayer is all I have to say. And that is in that John MacArthur says, quote, "True believers will vote for Trump. Can't affirm abortion and trans activism." I just found this in ChristianPost.com before I came onto the program today. I like looking in there. It's kind of got a broad spectrum of different things. And I saw that and I'm going, oh my goodness. I mean, over the years, like I mentioned in a different program, is that John MacArthur spoke about never saying anything really political or becoming politically involved or anything like that. And I mean, that's a pretty profound statement for any high profile Christian leader to come out and say. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that article. The link for that article is in the archives, and you can go there at SamuelAdamsReturns.net and look at that article and read it for yourself. But I thought that was pretty exciting. The person, though, that I wanted to speak about that is significant in my mind, whom I've talked about just recently, and I think in last week's program and the program before, and we will get back to Christian resistance against tyranny, because this is all part of it. And one of the persons that was very significant in that, again, was John Witherspoon. And what I want to point to today in respect of tying all of this together is one of his sermons that he preached, The Dominion of Providence Over the Passions of Men. You've heard me mention it before. This caused a great stirring when it was first preached in Princeton and published in Philadelphia in 1776. And this was about a month before Witherspoon was elected to the Continental Congress. So you have to understand, he wasn't there in the Continental Congress. Remember, you have this theologian, pastor, and the president of Princeton who is taking and preaching from the pulpit. So he's reminding the listeners in this particular sermon that when he addresses the political matters from the pulpit, and he kind of infers this, that ministers of the gospel have more important business to attend to than secular crises. So in that respect, I guess you got to lighten up, or I do in particular, lighten up on some of these pastors that I keep calling out. But at the same time, here's the caveat that Witherspoon puts in there. The caveat is, but, and it's but, of course, liberty is more than a merely secular matter. Get that? It's more than a secular matter. Liberty is more than a secular matter. And we can see that across all of the various countries out there that are communist, socialist countries where religious liberty, and jihadist countries, look at the jihadist Muslim countries and how the liberty of the people is suppressed. So let's see here. Witherspoon takes it out of the Psalms. Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee. The remainder of wrath shall thou restrain. And he goes through and he's talking about all of this idea of what is it that we need to have in religious liberty so that not only is the soul of man free, but the society of mankind has the freedom to act in accordance of how God designed us to function. So it's interesting. He actually goes in, and I wanted to jump into, because I think that what's important, and he doesn't get into it, but what's important is that selection, that taking and selecting kings, selecting those leaders over them, selecting bad leaders, so making the wrong choices by the people, either takes, and as we've talked before, you're either going to see the prosperity of your nation with liberty and justice, or you're going to see the destruction of a nation or a city, as we're seeing the cities destroyed when you have godless leaders put in place. So one of the quotes that a couple things here is that God grant that in America, true religion and civil liberty may be inseparable, and that the unjust attempts to destroy the one may in the issue tend to the support and establishment of both. So we're seeing that in the tearing down of all these cities. And we're going to talk about that tie together in the next next two segments. He kind of goes into this next portion here. I do want to read to you is that it cannot I cannot help embracing this opportunity of making a remark or two upon a virulent reflection thrown out against this doctrine. In a well-known pamphlet, Common Sense, the author of that work expresses himself thus, quote, and this is from Thomas Paine's Common Sense, "If the first king of any country was by election, that likewise establishes a precedent for the next. For to say that the right of all future generations is taken away by the act of the first electors in their choice not only of a king, but of a family of kings forever, hath no parallel in or out of Scripture. But the doctrine of original sin, which supposes the free will of all men lost in Adam, and from such comparison an in will admit of no other, hereditary succession can derive no glory. For as in Adam all sinned, and as in the first electors all men obeyed, as in the one all mankind were subject to Satan, and in the other to sovereignty. As our innocence was lost in the first, and our authority in the last, and as both disable us from reassuming some former state and privilege, it unanswerably follows that original sin and hereditary succession are parallels, dishonorable rank, inglorious connection. Yet the most subtle sophists cannot produce a juster simile. Without the shadow of reasoning, he is pleased to represent the doctrine of original sin as an object of contempt or abhorrence. I beg leave to demur a little to the candor, the prudence, and the justice of this proceedings." So then what we have is Witherspoon picking up on that, and he talks about that. And the reflection of everything that we're going to get into in the next two segments elaborates on the ideas that Christians, as what MacArthur's saying in so many words, it's your right, it's not just your right, it's your responsibility to vote, and to vote for that which is the closest to representing a government that will take and honor God and move in those directions of true justice, not social justice, not all these other things that are happening out there in Christendom in so many different ways. And as a friend of mine who's a very good Catholic and an Italian Catholic on top of that has said to me, was that look at what's going on in the Catholic Church right now. They're telling everybody to bow down to all this white privilege, social justice insanity, which is a theology that does not hold any candle within the Bible. And so when we're looking at that, and as we dive into it, you see, if Thomas Paine put that in Common Sense, that means all of the patriots that read Common Sense, all of the people that moved forward with the American Revolution, read that paragraph that I just read to you. And in reading that paragraph out of Common Sense, they knew, they understood that original sin put us in a really weird place. So that takes us then into a discussion that many Christians don't want to talk about around federal theology. But the fact is that the American Constitution is established in federalism. And we're going to talk about that in the second segment on what is federalism, what is federal theology, and what does it mean that you as a Christian must vote, number one. If you don't vote, you're in violation of your duty to God, period. You're sinning if you do not vote. Now, vote your conscience would be, you better get straight what your conscience is, because Sam Adams knew it. So did, here we have with Witherspoon and so on, and so did the Anti-Federalists. We'll talk about that some more as we pursue these truths of federalism in particular in the next two segments. Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right. And this is Tom Navolis, your host, and I am delighted again that, you know what, you're back in the second segment. And all of you there at Liberty Works Radio Network, man, thanks for, you know, paying attention. Thanks for, you know, staying with me all these years and on these programs and throughout these now three time slots that we are at here with Liberty Works Radio Network. And I'm just thankful for all of that. So with that thankfulness, I just would ask you to go ahead and check out all of the other hosts and hostesses and just continue to help support the programming here at Liberty Works Radio Network. So just take that time to go to libertyworksradionetwork.com or lwrn.net. And yes, find that donate button. And please, let's keep this network going strong because it is about your liberty. So let's kind of pick up in where we left off to some degree. You know, sometimes I get from segment to segment and, you know, I do a mental shift as Kath and I are either talking at the break or we're taking and trying to, you know, find my notes wherever they are. And those kind of are sometimes all over the place. But where I was finishing up is that as a Christian, it is not just your right, especially in these United States, to vote. It is your duty. It is your absolute duty. And one of the areas I kind of want to touch on is what is federalism? But before I get to federalism and that, as we read in the first segment, from Common Sense, Thomas Paine ultimately goes way south, and Samuel Adams takes and chastises him because when Paine goes to France in particular, he walks away from anything Christian, and Sam Adams had to spank him because Thomas Paine actually started attacking Christianity. Which here he is, he's talking about it in Common Sense in that paragraph that I read to you from Witherspoon. He's talking about that, you know, part of the problem was man's sin and man's original sin. So that's something that we'll kind of touch on, and I don't know if it'll be this segment or in the third segment that I do this thing that a lot of Christians are afraid to look at, and many are I think they have confusion about it, is the federal theology, and what does that mean? They think it means, you know, taking over all of some kind of, you know, a religious government or something, which it's not. Anyway, I don't want to go down that path at the moment. But one of the things that I do want to bring to light in taking and Christians voting, and if you vote for a Democrat, because they are demons, now, they are absolutely in that place of Hosea 8:4 here, and I'll read a couple different translations. The New International Version goes, "They set up kings without my consent. They choose princes without my approval. With their silver and gold, they make idols for themselves to their own destruction." Pretty interesting. I go down to the New King James. "They set up kings, but not by me. They make princes, but I did not acknowledge them. For their silver and gold, they made idols for themselves, that they might be cut off." And pretty much the Old King James says much the same. For those that go with the the International Standard Version, "They set up kings in place, but not by me. They established princes whom I did not recognize. They crafted idols for themselves from their silver and gold. As a result, they will be destroyed." So what we have here is we're talking about in Hosea, once again, we're talking about the likes of Israel, but it transcends Israel in so many different ways. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of people that take some theological difference. And I'm not saying that Israel is any other type of Christendom from some perspective. So I'm not going to get into all of that theology at the moment. But the bottom line is that the church being God's bride, when you take and you do not exercise your voting and you vote for evil, you vote for evil, purely evil. And that's what the Democrats are right now, because Biden, come on, be real. Kamala Harris is a pure Marxist, okay? And anti-God, pro-killing humans, being baby or otherwise, pro all of the other insidiousness that there is that's out there. I don't have to list it. You go look at it yourself. And if you vote for that, then you know what? You're taking and doing everything here in Hosea that is you're going to place a king, but that may not be God's king. And once again, if your conscience is, if you're so whacked out on Donald Trump's tweets and how he approaches things from a speaking perspective, then go vote for Donald Duck, okay? But let me tell you something. This is the transition that we're going to take right now. Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime, and that includes Reagan. Donald Trump is the first president in 100 years plus that knows how to exercise federalism. And you know why? It's because his core council around him understands federalism. And you know why you have so many pastors and Christian leaders out there that are taking and against Donald Trump? Because they don't understand federalism. They don't understand the true essence of federal theology. And as a result of not understanding federalism within the context of a constitutional republic, they don't see what Donald Trump is really doing. In the fundamentals of federalism, we're going to get over here, and I'm going to, the definitions of all of that that I'm talking to you about is, again, in the notes at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. And you need to go there. You need to understand what that truth is. And we will take a look at some of that as I bounce back over here in all the definitions that we have. And I have a potload of them for you to take a look at. Let's start with the Cornell Law School. Legal definition, the Legal Information Institute, federalism. Federalism is a system of government in which the same territory is controlled by two levels of government. Generally, an overarching national government is responsible for broader governance of larger territorial areas, while the smaller subdivisions, states, and cities govern the issues of local concern. Both the national government and the smaller political subdivisions have the power to make laws, and both have a certain level of autonomy from each other. Okay, the United States is, the Constitution was developed in such a way that it is a dual sovereignty under which the states have surrendered many of their powers to the federal government, but also retain some sovereignty. For example, this dual sovereignty are described in the U.S. Constitution. So then we go through and we look at what is this, you know, supremacy clause, what is it in the Constitution, Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, and what it says. You can understand that more clearly in my book, From Covenant to the Present Constitution. And we can look at some of the, all of those different definitions on how we function under Article 1, Section 8, and then the retention of powers under the 10th Amendment, and one that many people forget and is even forgotten here is under that of the 9th Amendment. So there's a lot there. So federalism is something that Donald Trump is going, well, the states aren't responsible for that. So this whole coronavirus thing is when Donald Trump kept pointing back and saying, well, New York, Cuomo, you're responsible for that. You should have had all of that loaded up. Hey, you know what? We see that in certain areas when the federal government acts and when Donald Trump acted, the leftists, the Democrat leftists in particular, start crying out about federalism. But then when they want the federal government to be that total overarching institution, they're ready and willing to give everything up. Balance. There is a balance that's supposed to be there as to what is under the federal government and what's under the state's government. Here's under the National Archives, Legislative Branch, Understanding Federalism, a summary. Each of the five activities in this lesson, and this is a lesson that introduces a different aspect of federalism. Introducing Federalism explores everyday situations that demonstrate the influence of federalism. The historic roots of federalism show you, the student, you're all students, we are, I am, how the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution are grounded in federalism. As you know, I love the Articles of Confederation because they were purist when it came to federalism. And I'm sorry, but I will say is that, all right, I'll give it a lower, 90%. I was going to say 98%. But I'll go with 90% of Christians, and I would say 95% of pastors do not understand these principles of federalism, let alone, as I said earlier, federal theology. Federalism in history uses historical legislation to illustrate how the relationship between the federal government and the states has changed over time. Federalism in everyday life uses everyday experience to show the overlap among the different levels of government. The activities can be completed separately over the course of several classes. So here's a whole thing that you can take, all right, from the National Archives, a course on understanding federalism. All right, I don't know, you know, this is something you can do on your own. The link is there, right up there, samueladamsreturns.net. You can see it. Go there, find the link from the National Archives, and dig in. Now, federalism, this is from policied.org, and it's more real time. He's talking about what was going on and how it worked with the coronavirus pandemic in ordering non-essential businesses to close and residents to shelter. That wasn't a federal thing, okay? The national government did not do that. They recommended that, but they could not tell us to shut down. No, that's all at the state level. That's why you still have many states that are not opening up. And we're going to continue all of this and talk a little bit more about federalism and that it's required to understand this when you vote for the president. Because you have to understand, especially you Christians have to understand that Donald Trump is implementing federalism again. When he said in his inaugural speech, he was returning to government to you, meaning us, we the people, he understood at that moment and declared that he was going to reinstitute federalism into our governance overall. Well, the socialists, the Democrats, the Marxists, the Democrats, the communists, the Democrats don't want that. They want the status quo, which is already a form of socialism in America. All right. Sam Adams understood this when he said utopianism is unconstitutional. And so the Anti-Federalists warned of where we are today, and come back in the next segment to continue the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this third segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those Anti-Federalists, they got it right. And this is Tom Novolis, your host. And man, I'm sure glad you're here to talk about federalism. And we may touch on it, not a whole lot, on what federal theology is, because I think I laid it out a little bit. I kind of gave you a little tease on it. Anybody that has studied anything about federal theology will catch some of the real key words that were there that are so biblically sound. It just is mind-blowing in that. Now, what I want to do, as I always do in this segment, is welcome back all my friends with Soaring Eagle Radio. Tom, you said Soaring Eagle Radio first instead of Screaming Eagles. All right, just so you know, you guys don't miss the bubble out there, all you Screaming Eagles, welcome back. And thanks for being here. But we have more to cover, as we were talking about federalism. And Kath and I were going back during the break from the National Archives, as I mentioned for you and Soaring Eagle, that there's a course on federalism from the National Archives. One of the things that I mentioned, and I'll say it, is that probably 90% of Christians do not understand what federalism is. And I will say now, I think 98%, I said 95, I'll probably go up 98% of the pastors have no clue of what federalism is from the perspective of a constitutional republic in the United States, so they can't get a grasp of federal theology because they don't understand the very basic principles of federalism. With that said, here you go. Here's something earth-shattering. Earth-shattering. It's like, you know, some cataclysmic event. This class in the National Archives is recommended for grade level 6 through 8. Oops. Sorry, all you adults out there. I guess you missed something in grade level 6 through 8. But hey, got to have a little fun with it, right? You know, I'm not slamming on anybody. I'm just saying we missed it. A lot of people missed it. Or you weren't. It wasn't made interesting enough that it was something useful as an adult. So anyway, let's press on, because I think where I was leaving off is from Policeed. This is a Knowledge and Wisdom Insight website, policeed.org. It's in your references. Is that they're actually talking about and applying it, federalism, to what's going on or what happened with the coronavirus issues. So I think this is really, really timely in looking at that everything, as I mentioned in closing, was that of the second segment, is that Donald Trump, at his first inaugural speech, because I am expecting, if Christians go out and do what they're supposed to do and vote for the policies of righteousness, you may not like the man personally, but I'll tell you what, if you don't go and research who and what the man is doing for good governance, then you are negligent in understanding Hosea's choice, God's choice for who's in office, okay? And you're falling into the evils of the Democrats, and you're going to have to go back to Hosea 8:4 when you put up a king that isn't God's selection, and when you take and you go and make your own idols because you think your economy is more important. Anyway, I'm getting off the topic. Please, all I can do is ask and say, don't vote for a Democrat. You have to vote for righteousness. And remember, go look in the archives, you know, go look in the archives on the website. Even John MacArthur's turned around and said, you got to vote for Trump. And those who know how I have felt about John MacArthur in the past, it's like, whoa, wake up, baby. You know, wake up. Hey. So anyway, the coronavirus we're looking at here is that Donald Trump instituted the purest capacity of federalism that he can within the convoluted swamp of Washington, D.C., and the present operation of our national government. This is a great article on that. Do I agree with everything in it? I'd say about 90%. But the things that are real key in here is that what is federalism? I love this description that's put in there by these two law professors, John Yeo and James Phillips, and how they explain it is at the top of the national government, which exercises power that is supreme, but that national power is also limited in scope. At the bottom of the pyramid are the states. Their power can be superseded by the national power when there is a clash. So always remember that. So when Trump says he can do this, I guarantee you he's not just doing it like Obama did as just assuming the power. Donald Trump is researching how that fits in federalism, and then he acts. So this continues to say their power, being the states, can be superseded by the national power when there is a clash, but the states' power are much broader in scope, meaning in many areas of life, only the states have the power to act. So that's like in the shutdown, okay? And that's the example, is that in fact, the feds can only recommend to shut down, but the states, the governors, and the state legislatures in particular, because many governors acted outside the laws and the constitutions of their states in doing their shutdowns. But the fact of the matter is that that has to be done within the context of the states. And a very interesting article here, talking about the principle is clearly enshrined in the Constitution. The Hoover Institute research fellow and current associate who is on the Arizona Supreme Court explains the constitutional foundational federalism. So this is just a really great article in talking about that. What were the founders thinking when they wrote this? How did that look? They look at it from a lot of different perspectives and constraint, how the government powers threaten the freedom. In respect to that, I got to tell you, this is a well-done article with a number of videos in there. And you know what? Take the time to look at it. Great research. Good stuff. Okay. What do we got left, Kath? About 8 minutes? 7 minutes. Hey, I was close. So let's touch on this a little bit, on federal theology. So what I read earlier in one of the definitions of federalism is that in this idea, it is two levels of government, generally an overreaching national government, and that is responsible for all the broader governance of a large territory, while the smaller subdivisions, states, and cities govern at the local issue. So, church. The New Testament church, Jesus Christ is reigning. He is sovereign. He is over everything. The whole world is his footstool. Every king, every nation is his. He claimed it. It was given to him by the Father for that great act that they decided before creation even came into being, that great mystery of decision that Jesus Christ would come to earth and be that salvation, not just for all of mankind, but for all of creation. Every star, every universe, every galaxy, every aspect of what is known in creation has gone through the act of salvation in the work of Jesus Christ. That's where I'm starting, okay? He's head over it all. So federal theology is a noun And I'm going to take you just out of a classical definition in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary since 1828. So the definition of federal theology, the theological system which rests upon the beliefs that one, that before the fall of man was under a covenant of works by which God, through Adam, promised man eternal blessedness if he kept the commandments. And two, that since the fall of man has been under a covenant of grace by which God, by his grace, promises the same blessings to all who believe in Christ. So this is also called covenant theology, which I've talked about a little bit in some other programs in what is covenant and covenant theology. That's Merriam-Webster, all right? Federal theology from reform.org is that all mankind are viewed in Scripture in relationship to the two Adams. The first Adam was a natural head, okay, of an entire human race, according to Romans 5:12. We've all sinned in him. And in him, then, well, you know, it's all part E to the covenant of works. Thus, Adam was not merely a private person, but a public person, the real and proper head of all his posterity. The last Adam being Jesus Christ, and I don't have time to get into all of this reading, but he is the one. He is placed ahead and sovereign over everything. And we are in union with him in his spiritual, not natural, but nonetheless real. They're said to be in Christ just as truly as Adam's posterity is said to be in Adam. Thus, as the disobedience of Adam was righteously imputed to all for whom he was the federal head and representative, federal head, he was it at the top, the obedience of Christ is righteously, legally, and effectively imputed to all of those, and he is the federal head now over it all. So when we look at that, and when Jesus taught us to pray the Our Father, and he said that his will, the Father's will, be done where? On earth as it is in heaven. And Jesus is in heaven sitting at the right hand of the Father. Guess what, folks? There's a logic to all of this that runs the gamut of leadership, headship, and following through. What does that mean on earth? How is it executed on earth? So if you want justice, if you want truth, if you want to understand good governance, then from the pulpits, Christian, we need to be understanding that we need to be operating in Christ. And as I've said before, and I think I said it in the last program as well, is that it's our responsibility to be carrying out the extensibility of the gospel into every aspect of our life. That means within our families, that means within our jobs, that means with governing, that means to be responsible, to get on different boards for local governance, because now we're affecting that Christ-given authority and representing Christ-given authority on earth that should be in every aspect of governance. And you know what? That's what our founders wanted. That's what they said, that our Constitution was for a moral and virtuous people. That means from the pulpits that we're moral and virtuous as we learn how to execute what the Father has in heaven on earth in good government, and that we have Christians executing good government instead of what we have with all the Democrats that are there in the bureaucracies and all these different boards and all these different local governments in the cities that are burning, in every entity that is there that is acting against us. Our Constitution was established in such a manner that Christians have the opportunity to greatly influence all of government. What are you doing about it? How about getting out there and engaging? You don't have to write. You don't have to march. You just have to do. So come on back next week when Samuel Adams, yes, he's returned through the ideas of the Anti-Federalist, getting it right.